Hello, and welcome to episode 219 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, a place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars, and joining me this week are the creator of Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
The writer behind Cockney Kung Fu, and another title we'll probably be mentioning later on in this particular episode, it's Tony Esmond.
Hello, Vincenzo.
Hello. Whenever you send me mail through the post, that you always put that.
I sent a letter to a package to Dan this week, and I put guns on it as well.
Yeah. I get grief off the missus for all the names that come through on the different packages.
Really?
Everyone that sends me something in the post, like comic related, it's always something.
Why are you getting grief for it though? Or you mean she's joining in and just bullying you?
I just think like I don't know. Have to ask her.
Yeah. Oh, there's
let's
a
get
few
on the show.
Yeah, let's get her on the show. That'd be good.
Why does that frustrate her? I think she's a bit concerned that so many weird people know where I live. To be fair, it's a valid concern.
Oh my word. But yeah, she's not on this week's show, but we do have a guest. Yes, and joining us for the whole show this time, this week we're joined by a publisher, Digital Comics App, sort of creator, and quite possibly the most patient sponsor a silly little podcast could ask for. It's the man behind Comic House, Pete Jeanpaul. Hello, sir.
Good evening. How are you, gentlemen?
Good, thanks.
Good.
We are well.
Back, mate. Good to put up with the filth for about 20 minutes, so well done.
Time to be highbrow.
You see, I've done these podcasts a lot, can you? I said good evening when people are probably going to be listening to
good
it in the morning.
Good evening.
I've ruined the illusion already.
Pete Jeanpaul, the Alfred Hitchcock of comics. No, that's probably not the best. Good evening. Yes, Pete's joining us this week, and he's going to be here for the whole show, because it's our last part of the comic making process, this journey we've been on for the past 6 weeks now. And we're talking about digital coming up, which is a process. You know, we talked about printing last week, and we've talked about all the different stages leading up to it. If we didn't talk about digital comics, it would be frankly ridiculous. So we're going to get stuck into that in a minute.
The future.
Yeah,
so they say.
No, but do you know what is the future, though?
Comic House.
It is indeed Comic House.
Yeah,
he's got a front row seat.
I'm nervous now, because normally I say something rude or ridiculous right at this moment.
Yeah, yeah.
But luckily we're not on video, so I can't see him scowling at me.
Yeah, no. He's just going to be like Nero playing the violin while Rome burns around him. Yes, Comic House are our sponsor. Thank you very much, Pete. But yes, as we say, they're the indie comic marketplace with a difference, and we love them. And we're going to be talking more about their app very soon, amongst others. But you can just self-publish your books, list them on there for free, start selling straight away. This is brilliant, because Tony's keeping really quiet because we've got the sponsor on the show.
Sorry.
This is amazing. Do you want to come on every week, Pete? That would be
good. I wrote my profile on there today.
Really?
Yeah, filled it out.
Nice.
Yeah, it says my hits do lie. That's all it says.
Oh, that is your bio, isn't it? Yeah.
No, normally it's my hips don't lie, but they do now, don't they? Let's face it.
They don't help you out as much as they used to.
No, I'm getting old.
Yeah. But, if you're a creator on the Comic House app, the digital comics app, do fill in your profile. That's something that you're pushing, isn't it, Pete?
Really keen to do it, yeah, because I think the more people that do it, if people are reading a comic book and they want to find out more about the creators, then they can just click on the links, find your Twitter, see what you look like and your biog and all that sort of stuff. And I just think it's really important.
Yeah.
We've got this massive database of things that you can just add creators to, and then they can all claim them. And I just think it looks nicer on the app when you can actually see the creators and see what they've been up to and link in all their previous books as well. So
I think it really helps, because with indie comics as well, when you probably more than a lot of the mainstream, I would say, with small press and independent comics, if you suddenly find a creator just out of the blue that is like, oh my god, this is the best thing ever, you will look for that name in other things that they've done. You know, sometimes with the mainstream there's so much, you know, and sometimes a lot of it can be very similar, but I don't follow like mainstream creators as much as I do, but with like small press I'm always on the lookout for what they've done before
I'm exactly the same, and I think it's quite an easy thing to do. You just find your name on the Comic House site and then click on claim my profile, and you'll be asked to put in something like who you are, just so I know that it's not some randomer trying to claim your profile, and then you can just access it in your dashboard and just add your profile picture and Twitter links and contact details and all that sort of stuff. So it's it's quite a handy we've made the site, I mean, to be honest with you, all websites where you've got to submit something are a bit of a pain in the ass because it's a big database sort of thing and it needs to be done correctly. But this is hopefully quite an easy one to use. And if we can get all the creators adding their information on there, it's just going to look so much nicer on the app when people are reading the books.
Yes.
Nice.
So all those creators out there listening, you know, get involved and get stuck in it and do it. Because there's loads of titles on there at the moment. Dan, what's currently on there?
This week's new featured editions, we've got Megatomic Battle Rabbit 4, Awesome Comics Issue 4, yes. Digitopia 1, Displaced Dreams 1, Androsaur's graphic novel, Hello to Jason Isaacs, and But I'm a Cat Person, Volume 5. Read these and
volume
hundreds
5.
More.
Bloody hell. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I've heard of that, I'm a Cat Person.
Sorry, you surprised me because you are a cat person.
I am. I am very, very much so.
Definitely check out Awesome Comics 4.
That's
total nepotism.
I mean, the title's in the name. You know, it says it all because this is the Awesome Comics podcast, and well, we made an awesome comic. There's four issues of it,
and we're doing another one. We were talking about it earlier.
There's plans to do something.
Early days.
Yeah, something a bit special, but we've got something in the works. Long-time listeners will
probably...
I'm
going to announce the name of it later.
No, you're not, because we don't have a name for it. When you say we talked about it beforehand, that was like 5 seconds of, well, this is going well.
Yeah, that's all we need. We're so in sync.
Yeah.
We're like NSYNC, but comedy.
NSYNC. Yeah.
Oh, God. And we dance like them. Synchronized.
Oh, we're doing our special. Hey, I remembered this the other day. I completely forgot about it. But you've promised to do a dance for a lady on her podcast, and you've never done it.
Oh, God.
That was a nice silence, wasn't it?
That was a dead air there.
Guilty silence there, Vincenzo.
I can't remember why.
You were on, was it, whose podcast was it you're on? You were on that
Stacey's.
24 hours.
Was it the Pop Culture Parlor? Wasn't it?
That's it. Yeah, you said you'd do a dance for her.
I think we need to know the background on this.
I think it was just a dance in general. And I can't remember why. I think we're talking about
the Carrick thing. If you hit so many or something like that.
Yes, that's what it was. Yeah, it was like the 24-hour podcast or something like that.
I bet you're glad I brought that up, aren't you?
Yeah.
Not really, but then again, with the
another
volumes and volumes
promise.
of audio I have on you.
Oh. True.
On you both.
One day. You haven't got enough to make me do the dance yet, but it's close.
Yeah, close.
Yeah.
There's not enough sort of content on there to rival Comic House, who are brilliant and for only £3 a month.
Nicely done.
Yeah, but you get access to the app and loads of digital comics, which we're going to talk about very soon, actually. So, go to comichouse.com, find out more about the service and about our great sponsor. And, you know, he watched it go completely off the rails for a good... We might have the longest sponsorship ads ever, because sometimes it turns into a 10-minute conversation.
Sometimes. You have to pull us out. I forget we're still on them.
Yeah, because I do think... I haven't even said the URL yet. It's like, well, I was in the shops today and they only had salt and vinegar. I was like, okay, hang on, calm down. We've got to do the...
I like salt and vinegar.
I know you do.
You've got something to tell us, haven't you, Tony? Talk about your... you've been day tripping.
We've done the advert because I don't mind talking about it. I just want to make sure that Vince is okay.
Yes, we've done the ad now. Sorry, Pete.
Oh, okay. Pete. That was one of the better ones, mate. I'm proud of us.
Ticked. Advert done.
I keep forgetting we're doing a podcast. It's just nice just having a chat.
That's usually where we come unstuck.
Yeah. But Tony, I can't remember. Did we record early last week or did we not?
Yeah, we did, didn't we?
We did, yeah. When we recorded early, the Saturday leading up to the episode
Sunday.
Going live. Was it Sunday, was it? You did
Sunday.
Sunday. Ah, yeah, the Sunday. Tony was at, is it Hackney Comic and Zine Fair, the first one?
It was. I'm going to say Sundays might be a thing now.
Mm.
There's always been a thing, Tony. On a Saturday to go to an event, isn't there?
Yeah.
Sunday, you're more chilled out, aren't you? You're more likely to wander into town to go to something, I think.
Yeah.
So, and we've talked a bit about the one-day events the way forward, haven't we? We've mentioned that. A lot of events don't have enough for 2 days, do they?
No.
Yeah. No, I think the 2-3 day ones kind of, it's a bit of a ball ache.
Yeah. Yeah. So to be fair, it was a zine fair around the corner from the Nobra offices. So we had a chat. We said, oh, well, we just fancy doing it for fun. Do you know what I mean? And me and Sam and Sam's son, Louis, pushed the trolleys from the office round to the venue. Two trolleys we pushed around because it was also Hackney Carnival, which is going on outside. I don't think the crowds for the carnival and the comic fair are the same.
No.
There was far too many thongs for my taste. I'm not a prude, you know me.
At the zine fair?
Yeah, yeah. Me and a couple of the others, me and Gareth Hopkins were in thongs. Not you could see, but no. But I, as I walked home.
Have you seen that film Sexy Beast?
That's me opening it.
Bam, bam, wow, wow.
As I walked back, because I had to walk through the main bit of the carnival, and it was kind of over, so everyone was sort of hanging about and smoking. Let me just say this, as a sort of a 50-year-old white conservative, not Tory, but like a normal kind of man, there was a lot of weed. I think I was high just walking through it. Anyone wants to test my piss now, I'll probably come up high. Do you know what I mean?
Jesus. And there was,
but beyond like a lot of weed peeing in the street, quite good music, and there was an awful lot of butt cheeks on show, which I don't mind normally. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
A lot of thongs, a lot of that going on. That's all right. I don't mind it too much.
So what did the comic crowd look like compared to that?
Obviously. More sort of hipstery kind of people.
Fair enough.
You know, more sort of quiet-ish, you know. But I'll tell you what, we were pushing the trolleys round, and we sort of pushed through the crowd of people who were there for the carnival, who was super nice, like literally super nice, and they were helping us up on the pavement with the trolleys because they're quite heavy. And so I was setting up, and I was chatting to my next door neighbour, I'll talk about in a minute. And so I saw some bloke come in and he was wearing one of those sort of headdresses, you know, like you see at Notting Hill Carnival, like the biggest sort of elaborate feather headdresses and a pair of shorts. And I think he'd brought in the box that we'd dropped a box off our trolley, and someone had brought in this box and said, oh, have you dropped this off your trolley? And went, oh, yeah, thanks. That's quite nice, isn't it?
Dude, yeah. That's a lot of stock.
Yeah, I mean, it's like 10 books a skip, which is a few quid's worth, you know. So it was mobbed. I put some pictures online. It was just packed all day long. We had Luke Healy, who's just done Americana, turn up and he did a signing. We pretty much sold out of his stuff. We sold out of quite a few books. Everyone was suited, down to Joe Stone, really. Joe Stone and a couple of people who organised it. It was just lovely. It was a lovely event, really busy. Like, people would come up and go, oh, tell me about this book, and oh, I'd like that. And it was like that sort of thing. Big shout out to the No Brow Massive who were there with me and at the table. Sam, Louis, Ayula, Ivana, Emily. There was a few of us there, and we had an absolute blast. Really nice. And my next door neighbour was the always magnificent Elizabeth Queerstritt, who gave me sent me a copy of Too Serious to Sleep, which is a collection of funny and insightful drawings of hers. We interviewed Elizabeth on the pod before. I think we did it at True Believers, didn't we? If you remember, she's got, I love her stuff. It's just quirky and funny, and she's got a great sense of humor, and she spent the day knitting. And then every time she wanted to ask me a question, she put her hand in the air, which maybe did make me chuckle. So go to Queerstritt, queerstritt.co.uk, and you can see some of it. She's got a great little webcomic, which I'll have to mention at the end of year sort of roundup. But I would it was a curated event, so I think that you had to apply your approach to stuff like that for the event. But I've already spoke to Joe, and he said he's definitely going to do it next year again.
Oh, nice. Great.
We were talking to people like nonstop all the time. Handed out loads of awesome comics, podcasts, postcards to people and stuff as well.
Nice.
Quite a few listeners. Zach, who's a listener, he came down. Loads of people, in fact. The Avery Hill boys. You know, it was a good laugh. Yeah, Katrina Chapman, who I only literally sort of waved at across the room because we were so busy, you know.
Mm.
But yeah, I'd recommend it to anyone next year. I'm hoping it's going to grow. But it was in the London Fields Brewery, which is two rooms. I think one's like one of these sort of where people go and listen to music. I don't know what they're called.
Yeah.
And it was that sort of with a bar along one side, and everyone was drinking beer. But, you know, it's like we've said this before. You know, if it's like if you're at Leamington or Nottingham or someone, and someone comes to the table, you know, glugging a pint of lager, you think, oh, here we go. But there it was quite normal. I think Simon Russell came down, and he was on his second pint, which I accused him of being on his fifth pint. But, Yeah, it's good.
Well, let's hope. I mean, it's good to know that this event was well attended. And let's hope like events like this just sort of get bigger and better.
We go through that little emotional peak and trough, don't we? Where you think, oh no, nobody's attending conventions, and you go to something like that, and it's like mobbed down. You think, oh good, brilliant, let's carry on. You know, it's like that. Yeah,
I'm glad because we've kind of not had the best year, have we? But
yeah, yeah, I think you're right, man.
Yeah,
yeah, I've got high hopes for the rest of the year. We've got a few events coming up.
Yeah,
got high hopes.
Yeah, and certainly this year's going to be an interesting discussion when we get to our end of year show.
Yeah, it will be, won't it? I think the landscape's changed a bit this year.
Yeah.
I feel like it's shifted a little, you know?
And we haven't made any plans when it comes to the end of year show yet, so...
No.
We usually leave that till 1 week before the end of the year show.
Yeah.
Yes.
What the hell are we going to talk about?
And then we usually run massively over time.
I think we're going to have to do another quiz, because that went down quite well last year, so maybe around Christmas we'll do another quiz show. That's quite fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, that'd be good. That'd be good. Yeah, it was a good laugh.
It was.
Yeah.
We could go up against the Comic Smell Boys.
Ah, yeah, they're good lads. I'm seeing them on Friday. Yeah. I'm seeing them at B&A in Dundee on Friday, so I'm looking forward to that. Ooh. I've never met David, so I'm hoping David Robertson's going to be there as well.
That will be good. Let's make something happen.
Yeah.
Anyway, we always make the fun happen every week on this show. Yeah, I just thought, just lean into it. Just
Go with it. Go with it.
Turn into the skid.
Yeah. And... Like we said earlier, past few weeks we've been talking about the comic making process, and so we started with writing, went on to artwork, then colouring, lettering, editing, then printing. So basically, something for everyone, really. Mm. And thank you to everyone that's been following the shows, be you new listeners, old listeners, or alike. We've appreciated the feedback, and to be honest, there weren't going to be this many editions.
No, we're going to do four, weren't we, at the start?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. So, we just added a couple more. One of which is this week's, which we've never properly had a...
No brainer.
We've never had a focused discussion about digital comics, which is crazy when you think about the amount of times we're talking about what we've read on Comixology, Comic House, Sequential, or wherever we've found books.
I think I'm literally about 50-50 physical and... digital at this point, and I'm a Luddite, you know me.
Which is interesting, because when we started you really weren't.
I didn't even have a Comixology account when we started.
So that's, I think that's a perfect barometer of how to judge it. Digital comics are now bigger than ever. That's not to say it's the most popular medium ever, you know, comics are getting bigger and better, but the availability of comics these days is wider it's wider than it's ever been. Whether some people may grumble about this, that, or the other, if you look at it on paper, if you want to read a comic, any comic, there's a good chance you'll be able to find it digitally. Apart from what I'm going to recommend later in the show, but I'll get to that later.
You can finish a comic and have people reading it on that day. With digital.
Yeah,
that is great, isn't it? Yeah.
Digital over the has changed the comic landscape, but has it been for good? Has it been for bad? You know, what have been the peaks and the troughs? That's what we're going to be discussing about this week, and especially if you're making comics, because this is about the comic making process. If you're making comics, what are your digital options? You know, if you want to just get your comic out there, like Dan says, if you've made your comic. And you just want it to be in people's hands straight away, it will probably only take you an hour or so
if you've got a bit of a following.
Yeah.
If you've got no following whatsoever, that might be a bit more challenging.
Yeah, which is something we'll discuss as well. I think if we start this off with, and I think Tony's said it first, like how many comics are we reading digitally as comic fans? The people that we're talking. That are on this show now, what's the percentage of your comic reading physical to digital now? Tony, you said about 50-50.
I think it's because recently I've been away a lot. So for example, this week I was in a hotel 3 nights, and next week I'm the same. So I've got an iPad and I read Comic House, Comixology, and a couple of other ones. Mm-hmm. Obviously first Comic House is my first go-to.
Love you.
I at the moment I reckon 50-50. Yeah.
Okay.
Interesting. Right, so Tony's about 50%. What about you, Dan?
Mine's easily 90% digital.
Really?
Yeah, it's a lot more digital. But I'll read something digital and then want the... If I've really enjoyed it, I want the hard copy. Like, I'll start reading those X-Men and I thought, I've stopped buying them digitally because I want the hard copy. Mm-hmm. And I want that experience of getting it in the trade and then reading it all through.
I occasionally read stuff, and the X-Men's a good example of that, is where I can't wait for the day or two to get to the comic shop. Mostly because we're talking about it. Mostly because one of us will go, oh, have you read this? Fucking hell. And then I'll download it straight away, but it's also on the pull list. You know, it's like that.
Yeah. But a lot of it's like I read on like either Web, Comixology, or Comic House, read stuff, and then...
Or stuff we get submitted as well, guys.
Yeah, loads of that.
Yeah.
I would say I'm the same as Dan, but... Pete, what's yours?
I'm the same as Dan, I think. It's about 90% digital stuff.
Right.
I think for me, the whole reason behind Comic House was because I saw how when Spotify started, and everyone was like, "What? This is shit. Why would anyone go to Spotify and listen to stuff for free?" Do you know what I mean? Essentially, you can listen to stuff for free. It's going to kill the industry. It's an awful idea, but it's revolutionized how we listen to music. And I run a record label, that's my day job. I found that it's helping people discover music and they will still buy the vinyl copies.
Yeah, especially vinyl, I think.
Now CDs are falling off a cliff a bit, but people still want to buy vinyl and they'll discover their next favorite band and they'll buy the vinyl for it. And we wanted to replicate that with Comic House and allow people to discover the comics and then hopefully go and buy the print copy. So we want it to... I don't see it as a competitor to the physical print side of things. No. I see it as a complement to it, where you can actually, as you say, Dan, you can read the X-Men and then just... You want to have... Let's face it, all of us are hoarders, aren't we, really?
you're not wrong. Yeah.
I mean, so we're never going to stop buying the print copies of things, but it's given us the opportunity to perhaps be a bit more sensible and buy the stuff which we know we've read already and we know we love and we want to have that copy of it on the shelf at home. Yeah. So
I've made peace with that part of me that wants to own every single thing that I read.
Yeah.
And now I've sort of with digital, I've realized I can read this, enjoy what it is, and just leave it. I don't need to have everything. I can't have everything.
No.
Yeah.
You can have whatever you want, Dan. What would you like?
I can't afford all the books and I haven't got all the room to store them all. There'd be so many. But like I can pick that, cherry pick that stuff that really, really, really works and enjoy that.
I think that what Pete said, like that comparison to the like bands and like Spotify music is quite interesting as well. For instance, with my musical tech, I mean, I listen to Spotify. I use Spotify.
I
like discovering like new bands and stuff. And if I discover them, I'll certainly look for when they've got gigs in the area, you know, I'll try and discover when they're playing live. And then when you go see them live, you probably go pick up a bit of merch or you'll pick up a CD while you're there. You're going to support something. And in some ways, digital comics can do a similar sort of thing. Sometimes you'll read it, you know, on your iPad or your Kindle or whatever, and you go to a comic convention and you see the person, you know, face to face. You're probably going to walk away from the table with something that you've bought, you know.
I've had people coming up to me at cons and say, "I've just sold a copy of this particular issue of my comic book because they'd read it on the Comic House app," and that makes it so worth it for me.
Yeah.
What do you think the connection is? And because comics are a personal reading experience, aren't they? They're a lone reading experience, and to hold a bit of paper in your hand. Do you think that from your point of view, Pete, do you think the reading experience is different when you read it on a lot of people read it on a phone screen, don't they, or on a tablet screen?
Yeah,
do you think it connects in a different way or in a similar way? Or
I don't think. I mean, Comic House is my baby. Do you know what I mean? I still love to hold a comic book in my hand. I just think it's the convenience of having it on your tablet, all loaded up with your favorite comics to read on the train or when you're in kind of got time. I think the problem we've all got is there's not enough time. None of us have got enough time. I mean, I'm finding now that I can't finish some Netflix series because back in the day, I would have sat through the whole series and thought, I need to watch all of this and complete the set and watch it all. Yeah. I'd stop watching a film if I thought it was shit. But now time is so important to me that if I'm watching Jessica Jones on Netflix and I'm thinking, oh, I can't be asked for this anymore, I won't be asked for that anymore and I'll stop. And I, like Dan, I've come to terms with that aspect of my life where I don't have to watch a whole series now.
And also previously, a lot of that watching would have been done on DVD or video previous to that. And you would have had a financial investment in buying those DVDs.
Yeah.
But these days, with a streaming thing, you're thinking, well, I'm paying that anyway every month. I can just look at something else. It will still be there. I can always go back to it. Yeah, is that, isn't there? Yeah.
So much as well now. Like with digital, you kind of unlocked the whole world of comics. Every creator in the world is putting their work digitally. So, like, if you, I don't really have time for crappy comics if it's not grabbing me.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they're crap.
Just move on.
Just move on. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe crap. It's not your thing, then you find something that is your thing. So,
yeah.
But, Tony, I think the reading experience is obviously, for me, different.
Right.
Because I like to read a comic book in my hand, but the convenience of having it digitally for me.
Yeah.
And to find all these new books, which I wouldn't have perhaps come across, is really important for me.
I think there's a weird change, there's a shift, and I was the reason I say this is people look at everything now on their phones, don't they? I mean, unless you're working on a desktop, how often do you turn it on? You know, and the stuff that people are looking at on their phones and their tablets tends to be stuff like social media and Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, which has a really personal element to it. So you are looking, it's almost an element of your personality these days.
Yeah.
So when you're looking at a comic on the same device that you look at these very personal moments often, it has a certain familiarity and you feel a certain ownership over a comic. It's different from the old days when we used to buy a comic and the newsagents roll it up, put it in our back pocket and cycle home. It's I'm not saying it's better or worse, I'm just saying it's a different personal thing. You know, it's a strange thing like that.
Following on from that, one of the reasons those like 3-panel gag strips have done so well is because it's like you've been told a joke, and by sharing that onto your followers, friends, whatever, it's like you're retelling that joke for them, but you're also claiming part ownership of it because you're the one that shared it on.
Do you think it's entering the realm of the pub conversation where, you know, we used to talk to people in the pub and now we talk to people online? I think certain comics are part of that now as well, you know?
Like, so say you share something quite like mean-spirited or kind of nihilist or a bit down or something about depression, you laugh about it and people can relate and you connect that way through the sharing of these comics. It's where kind of the long-form comics still finding purchase in that for me, where those 3-panel gag strips are like going fucking gangbusters.
I think a good comic draws you in and makes you feel part of the conversation, which is why people love stuff like the X-Men, because it's the outsider comic, you know, there's an element of family about it. And when you're reading it on a device where you're normally reading emails or messages that come into you from your mum or your friends or something, it's a strange conjoining of the two things. Almost,
yeah, you're
you
right.
Know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think you still have a personal, even if you're reading comics 100% digitally, I think you can still feel a personal investment and
completely.
That you're supporting that comic book. Do you know what I mean? And that creator, because you're obviously, if you read a comic book, it's tagged somewhere that it's read, and it goes up the chart of that particular app or device or whatever. And I think you still feel ownership, and that's the great thing for me about music is buying music or listening to music. You feel like you're part of the band, sort of thing. Do you know what I mean? The same way that people who support football teams and stuff feel. They say that we won this weekend and all that sort of stuff. Everyone needs to feel ownership of something, and I just think it's
a sense of belonging as well, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm hoping that this, since we started this whole Comic House thing, I like to think there's a little community has built up around it of all the creators that are involved in
I think you're right.
And it's nice to, when you go to cons, to bump into them all and meet them for the first time or meet them for the third or fourth time or whatever, and just, it does feel there's a really nice groundswell of, I'm not saying Comic House is responsible, but it feels like there's a nice indie kind of gang running around in this crazy place, just releasing some really quality comic books.
And that's how you start a movement. That's how you start a popularity, is by the sort of, there's not an underground, but there's a certain subculture element to it. And, you know, there's a sense of belonging and people feeling inclusive, and people will join it and create stuff. And, you know, it's a burgeoning area of art, isn't it? That's how stuff starts, you know?
I mean, there's no bar to entry either.
The whole comic house theme was ripped off the Bauhaus movement because we wanted to make a movement for comics. Okay. So it's
interesting.
It's something that we wanted. I mean, if all the indie creators got together and just created one publisher tomorrow, they'd be massive. There's so many great books out there.
Yeah.
And I just think it's just really encouraging to see every week when people are putting new comic books on the app. For me, it's just so rewarding just to see all this new stuff coming on.
Mm. I mean, because indie comics is such a niche thing as well, isn't it? It feels bigger than it is, I think, when you're talking about audiences. You get those sort of rare cases that are bigger than sliced bread. But for a lot of us, you know, we appreciate each and every reader we get, and it's all about about maximizing who sees the comic. And sometimes you have to step beyond your feelings of the work itself, because no one wants to be that, you know, shameless PR machine, you know, that the person who's plugging their book, this, that, and the other. Well, some people
do. And I'm very conscious of this at the moment because I've got a Kickstarter, but it's always perennially annoyed us is the people who just will have a conversation with you and then throw a pitch, you know, a prompt for their comic in. You know, you've got to be careful. There's that fine line, isn't there?
Yeah.
Mm. I'm forever getting Facebook people adding me on Facebook, and then right off the bat, they'll send me a message saying, thanks for adding me. Hey, my Kickstarter. And I'm just thinking, what the fuck? Do you know what I mean? That's just...
We're English, for God's sake. A little bit of subtlety, please.
You wouldn't do that on the street, would you? It's just, come on. It's just, I find that just quite frustrating, really, because we do try to support as many Kickstarters as we can and support as many indie creators as we can. But I think if you're going to just come in cold like that and contact everyone on your friends list, even if you've just added them as a friend, I think that's a bit out of line, really.
So. I'm always conscious of Twitter accounts that are the name of a comic.
Yeah.
You know, you get that a lot, don't you?
I think the Kickstarter is a good thing to bring up at the moment, and especially speaking about digital, and we've spoken about this quite a few times, but I think it bears repeating again, seeing as this episode is all about digital, is the price of your PDFs or your pricier digital comic. On some Kickstarters, it's ridiculous.
It's absolutely
ridiculous. Yeah. Now, yes, you want to get paid what you think you deserve for the amount of work you've put into it. We're all the same. We always, blood, sweat, and tears goes into these things, and the amount of money you're getting back for the amount of effort you're putting into it is unbalanced. Do you know what I mean? Because
it'll never balance.
Yeah, it'll never balance. But that doesn't mean, and this isn't. I mean, it is getting better. I see some creators who do Kickstarters, and they have wonderful prices for their digital. That, you know, there's a lot of sense. I think a lot of them are getting more sensible, but sometimes I see a book, and this goes for, normally it's some of the bigger creators as well, or like bigger sort of campaigns you see on books. And, you know, if you've got, just say you've got 120 page book, I'm not talking about anything specific, by the way. this is hypothetical. Just say you've got your Kickstarter's for 120 page original graphic novel. It's going to be hardback, you know, brilliant, wonderful, full color. And the first tier where you're going to get the book is £20. Fair enough. It's a hardback. There's a lot of work that's gone into it, you know, that's great. And then sometimes you look at the digital tiers. Pounds is also dollars sometimes, you know what it's like.
Yeah.
But then when you see 120 page, essentially you're just going to get a PDF. That is all you'll get. Let's not put bows and whistles on it. That's literally all you're going to get is a PDF, which pretty much everyone can make these days. Well, most people, I think. PDF is...
Hang on.
It's so standard. You could do it, Tony.
You might have talked me through it, my friend.
Yeah. But once you know how to do it, it's as simple as anything, right? And 120-page PDF, I understand that you want to get the money that you know, the blood, sweat, and tears that have gone into it. But if you're charging, for instance, like £10 for a PDF, I will never back that.
Never.
I will never back that Kickstarter. at £5,
would you not back at any level? No, just at a...
If I like the look of the book, I'll probably go for the hardcover more. I do these days, as I'm talking now, I've backed a lot more Kickstarters and just gone for the digital only option. purely because, especially with like creators from the States, or across the world, I really want to read this book. But, and I understand the postage costs. You know, postage is a nightmare across the board.
Yeah.
Especially when you're running these campaigns, and you have to charge the postage costs, which are killer. It unfortunately, and it's gutting sometimes with some of these books. I can't pledge for the hardcover because the postage is more than the actual book, which I can't do that. But
it's got to be like exceptional for me to do that these days.
If there's a PDF option and it's decent price, yes, you've got my support. I'll do that. But you really have to be realistic with how much you're charging. And I think the 120 page graphic novel is probably a bad example, because some of the most ridiculous ones that I know we've seen on this show, like sometimes when we've had the WhatsApp group and just been like, look at this is ridiculous, which we do every week about everything, and it'll be about a 24 page, you know, a Kickstarter for an issue one of something, a 24 page PDF, and it'll be like £5. In what world? In what world is that?
One of the things with PDFs, when they say like we get like a digital wallpaper, I don't give a shit about any of that.
You can make a digital wallpaper by just screenshotting the flipping.
Yeah, I don't give a shit about any of that. When you say we get like 10 digital, I don't care. I don't know if I'm the only person who doesn't give a shit about. I just want to read the comic.
I know.
If it's a physical print, that's completely different.
Yeah,
it's yeah.
Yeah, I know where you're coming from, Dan, and I do understand. I mean, it's nice to have those tiers where it feels like you're getting more.
If you want to stick a few pin-ups in the back of the comic, that's fine.
Yeah, but I'm not one for the digital wallpapers. And because sometimes all they've done is added a couple of digital wallpapers and a couple of banners or something, or GIFs or something, and they've added another £2 or £3 or dollars to the price. It doesn't make sense. I think, you know, people have to be more realistic with what they're charging for their digital, and this certainly I think it will lead on to the next point I think we should talk about is what to charge for your digital comics when you put them onto any format. You know, if you're going onto Comixology, if you're on Gumroad, you know, or however, whatever platform.
Well, I've just done this, so I've literally done this 3 days ago or something.
Yeah.
And I've got, I think, how many pages, Vince? 36, isn't it?
36, yeah. And it's full colour. Full colour. Which I think doesn't really matter when it comes to digital, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it's also, it contains some extra material. So there's some short stories and stuff in there. And I put it up for £150. I think even the cheapest, you know, when they drop prices of 20-page Marvel comics on Comixology, they're £1.49. And I thought you'd get more out of this. So I thought £150 seemed reasonable. I don't know. I'd like to hear what you guys thought.
I think that's a great price.
Is that okay?
Yeah, it's fine. That's a great price. It's kind of that price that's just so kind of small that it's not even a consideration about getting it. Do you know what I mean? It's like, that's £150. What's that?
Especially sometimes when it's a one and done sort of title as well. Not saying that this particular title is, but sometimes I think, well, I can just read a, you know, £1.50. I can read an entire story for that, you know. Take my money.
Yeah, it's a good amount of reading time in that book as well, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So you got sort of the two short stories as well. So I think...
And you got the prose. Yeah.
I really think you... I think £1.50 is a great price for that. I think people I think you need to look at your digital side of things as a... Not a loss leader, but more of a kind of a promotional tool to sell your print.
Totally.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And I think it's... People charging too much for their PDFs is just crazy. It really is, because people want to read the PDF and then go and buy the print copy. They're not going to do that if they've spent £7 or £5 or whatever on a PDF. You're just doing yourself a disservice, I think. And as well, with a PDF, that they're just going to share it around with all their mates and all that sort of stuff. Do you know what I mean? If it's
and it gets the word about. I mean, you've only got to look at the amount of webcomics out there that then do gangbusters when you print them up into collections.
Exactly. Yeah.
A big thing we've seen for years now. We thought it might be a little blip when we started, but it's like stuff like Kira Regis and Dan's book and stuff, Vanguard. You know, it's like it's still a going concern. Still, people still are invested in it because they've read the digital one. You know,
And there's so many of these web comics that they'll have a following, which is, I think we'll talk about in a bit. But you know, I look at the web comic and it looks great, but when I look at their web page, it's like, oh, this is page 156 oh god, yeah. I don't want to go back to page one and see it from the start. But if
I quite happily have a 200-page comic,
exactly. But then they do it. They do a Kickstarter, and I think this is perfect. I will back this, and I can read it from page one.
It's all been curated. Yeah. It's all been organized, sorted out, maybe even improved on in the web version. And here it is. It's a fantastic sort of way of doing it.
I think probably what we're saying there is, for people who are putting their web comic up or their PDF up for sale, don't take the piss. Don't be too greedy, because it really does show. People do notice that stuff.
Yeah.
It's just from a purely economics point of view. Why would people spend £5 on your PDF of an indie comic when they could buy 3 issues of X-Men for that digitally? Do you know what I mean? You've got to remember
or a physical cheap trade in a sale at a comic shop.
That's the one that gets me, is if I can buy something physical for the same price, I'm really I'm not sure about this. I get a Michael Golden fucking G.I. Joe trade for a PDF of a small press that I don't even know.
I mean,
we're in a worldwide digital market. I mean, unfortunately, it's a level. The plus thing on that, it's a level playing field, so anybody can create and get it out there. But you're also up against the big boys as well, so you've got to price it in consideration of that.
Yeah.
And we've actually found a lot of people are putting stuff on the Comic House app, not just for the revenue that's going to come out of it, but purely from a promotional point of view. Rhys Finlay did it before he launched his Kickstarter. He put his first book up there, so people read it.
Okay. Then
went to the Kickstarter, and it proved. And Andy Clift did the same thing.
And I know Stuart McCune's done the same thing. He put actors up.
Exactly.
And if you look at his recent Kickstarter, he's killing it. I mean, he always kills it. He's even gone beyond what he had the previous time, you know.
Yeah.
And exactly. I'm sure a lot of that will be eyes from Comic House. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think one of the things I've learned.
People have picked it up on Comic House and gone and found it as a result. Do you know what I mean? So it's.
Yes.
The PDF price, I think, is really important to just gauge it properly. And I think as well, Vince, as you say, if people are seemingly taking the piss, I wouldn't want to back the whole campaign just out of kind of because I'm a bit of an asshole like that. I'll just be like, I'll cut off my nose to spite my face, sort of thing. Do you know what I mean? So
I agree. It does put you off, doesn't it?
That's one of the things with the cheaper PDF as well. It's that building up a following before you get a Kickstarter going, or like you ask people for crowdfunding, because if you basically just pop on the scene with a comic, unless it's absolutely amazing, you're going to get hard to build up sort of like traction and following. Because
it's something I've learned, you got to do a lead in, even if it's with like little, you know, a blog or a Twitter account, or you know, you got to get people interested before you press go, I think.
Nothing is guaranteed, absolutely nothing is guaranteed. Even with, you know, if you've got a following, you still got to push it, because you know you may have a following, but that following may not hear every time you've talked about it, so you need to keep going. Digital on Kickstarter is one thing, but obviously that's a PDF. I think across the board PDF is the fairly standard one. That's certainly how when we get sent comics, very graciously by you know, creators and listeners, you know, that they email stuff to us. It's always PDFs. I know there is other, you know, CBR formats and stuff, but I think the easiest one for everyone is PDFs. Yeah. And it's easy for us to share and just sort of say, oh, read this, we've been sent this.
The thing I've noticed of recent, maybe about the last year, is it used to be almost entirely Dropbox links is what I would be sent review copies on. Mm. But I have to say, the amount of cloud storage type Dropbox type apps is really ballooned out, you know. There's loads at the moment.
Seeing a lot of Google Drive links and things like that.
Even I keep having to download apps onto my iPad to download stuff, because it's I mean, Google's big now. That's what I probably get more on that than I do on Dropbox now.
Oh, Google's been all right, is it?
Sorry,
Google's doing all right, are they?
Yeah, they're doing all right.
Yeah, they're a little startup that no one's heard of.
Yeah, I mean, fair.
Google Drive. I don't have Word on my home machine, so I dump it on Google Drive, and then you can read it and edit it on there, which is fucking great.
It's a great idea, yeah.
Because Word won't fire up. Well, you can read, but you can't make any amends or do anything, or even copy the fucking text. So that's a right pain in the ass. But Google stepped in.
Yeah.
Look at you. Yeah. Taking it up.
Is that one of the
two fingers
crowd?
To the man. Fucking office.
We've got a host of, I mean, I'm banging on about Comic House here, so you'll have to excuse
me.
That's fine.
That's all right, man. That's what you know.
We've got quite a nice load of reviewers that actually have access to the Comic House app now. So if you are listening to this and you're a reviewer or podcast or whatever, give us a shout, because we're finding that people are putting their stuff up on Comic House, and it's an easy way, as well as selling it Dropbox and all this sort of stuff, to just say to people, say to review, it's now on the Comic House app for reviewing. So it's quite a nice way for the reviewers.
Yeah, that's excellent.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Just say you've got your PDF for your comic. Okay, let's start with this. You finished your comic, your opus. Maybe it was like, you know, your 20-page comic, just say. And you're thinking, right, okay, I want to release it digitally. I don't want to do print. I'm just going to go digital, yeah, because I can't afford to do print, say, you know?
Yeah.
Because that is a very viable for a lot of people these days, because print isn't cheap. Nothing's cheap these days, actually. So you can only go digital, but you're thinking, where do I go? You know, what formats are available to me? Well, luckily in this day and age, there's tons. So obviously we've got the aforementioned Comic House. Join them. Join the cult and join us.
Drink the Kool-Aid,
and you'll love it. Not just for like the community, but there's loads of it. You know, you'll be sitting amongst loads of other fantastic titles on there. But I mean, the Amazon one, well, quite literally the Amazon one, is Comixology, which I know I see is the biggest one across the board. Certainly I've mentioned many times on this show that on the Wednesday I've picked up a title from Comixology. House, my two readers.
My recommend is Comixology
And obviously there's a big audience there. Also, everyone's on there. So just because you're in a bigger pond, but there's a lot more fish.
I would say the second biggest one in the UK is the 2008 one.
Yeah, which is, that's an interesting one.
I
think, because that's just 2008 stuff, isn't it? That's just Rebellion's one, isn't it?
Yeah, and some of the old, you know, comics, UK comics stuff that they're putting on there.
Yeah.
But 2008 doesn't put their stuff elsewhere.
Yeah.
Which is a strange one that not many people understand.
No.
But they only put their stuff on their app, so they're kind of keeping their own little empire. Yeah. You know?
So if you love your 2000 AD, probably get that app, you know, if you want to try their digital comics out.
Yeah, I've got it. There's some free stuff on there.
I've got it as well. It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're publishing for yourself, it's going to be useless to you because it's 2008. You got Comixology. Is Sequential still going strong, Tony? I know you've mentioned it
is, mate. I've literally just checked it, and it still is. They've got their, I think they make most of their bones out of, they do a lot of the Dark Horse stuff. So Martha Washington, right. Black Hammer, or the Department H. There's a lot of stuff on there that is American stuff, you know.
Yeah. Is there much in the way of indie and smaller press sort of titles?
There's a few things. I think Avery Hill, off the top of my head, I haven't looked at it for a while, but I think Avery Hill were on there. And there's a few people who are sort of popping up on there. What's the Comic Scene are on there? The thing we did.
Yeah,
that's on there. There's a few little comic magazines. There's a magazine called Infinity, which is about, I think it's free actually, which is about comics. So there's one on Neil Gaiman and there's one on Eddie Campbell and stuff like that, you know.
That's, I mean, quite good. It'd be interesting to see what that process is like for a creator going through Sequential and publishing their stuff there. We can only speak for the, like, what we've done, of which I've done. You know, I've done a couple, but, you know, Comic House couldn't be easier, and Comixology, I've done it enough that it's easy. As like Dan said it before as well, if you've got a PDF of your comic, then it's fine. With Comixology, if you're putting your first book on Comixology, it will take a while for them to approve it.
Yeah, I'm thinking about this at the moment. I was looking at their website before we came online, actually, to figure out. I actually had a look at that in Comic House. Comic House seems a lot easier.
Comic House is the easiest one. I mean, with Comixology as well, there's a lot more. You know, you can't just post anything up there. They will
it's literally curated.
Yeah, they will say no, that doesn't fly, or you know, you say the word fart too many times, and they'll no, they.
They say right, that okay. because like, well, maybe my, I was kind of cautious on the first couple of episode issues of Vanguard. I like tone down the swearing because I think you can only have fuck like two or three times.
Yeah.
And then after really? That, I didn't give a shit. I just fucking left it all in there and no one's done anything.
Yeah.
So what's the manga one? Is it Shonen Jump? Is that the one?
Shonen Jump.
Yeah.
That's huge, man. If you're into manga, everyone's all over that.
I know Sam Webster's a big proponent of that. Yeah. And that's got loads. That is, you know, if you like your manga, and we're talking about digital comics, and you're not reading this. It's not an app that I've started yet, but I think this...
No, me neither.
I think when I dip my toe in it, I'll probably drown because there'll be that much choice and I won't know where to start. But, I think that's probably the place to go because if you're going to, like... If you look at these other ones, like Comixology, say, you get your manga titles in there, but they're dotted around and it's not, you know...
Is that the subscription Shonen Jump, whatever it is? Is that a subscription-based one?
I believe they set it up as a subscription-based app because they were suffering a lot from pirating and illegal downloads and torrents.
Yeah, right, Which is huger in the manga world than it even is in the comic world, isn't it? The American Western comic world, There's another one that's come up which has got a lot of manga on it called Graphite. If anyone's come across,
I've not heard of that one.
Yeah, I saw that one. It's launched in the States, hasn't it? A couple of months ago. I think it's some guys who are previously involved in some other site. I can't remember the exact gist of it all now, but it's quite a similar setup to Comic House. But they got some good titles on there. So
yeah, it's I think they're about to launch a sort of subscription side of it, aren't they? I think you can. I don't know how you do this, but you can look at it for free. I don't really know how it works at the moment.
There's adverts placed within when you're reading the comic book, there's adverts that pop up.
Right, okay.
I talked to Ed and Aaron who put a book up there in the States, and I said how are they funding this and making money? So it's there's adverts that pop up as you're reading the comic.
Right. Yeah, Harry Marcos from Marcosia was telling me about it. I think he showed me it sort of thing. Yeah.
Cool. Okay. I mean, it's my worry about all the apps that are joined. It's great when you've got an app that comes up which has got everything on it or a lot of stuff on it. But I think when publishers are looking at launching their own ones, like you've got your Marvel Unlimited, your DC,
Dark Horse app, one,
and your 2000 AD and all this sort of stuff, I think it's going to become quite expensive for the punter. Do you know what I mean? So,
I know Marvel sync with Comixology. Is that right?
I think it might. I've seen on Comixology read for free if you've got Marvel Unlimited or something like that.
We're going to come against the same problem that we did with streaming service.
Yeah.
And it does unfortunately force people back to piracy, but people were like, rather than have 10 fucking subscriptions to watch 10 shows that are on 10 different channels, pirate it.
Yeah, I'm a bit worried about it because it's the same as not having Spotify but having Universal app and a Warner's app and a Sony app, and it just doesn't make sense to me where people just want to go to one or two places and get all their stuff. And
that's all I can be bothered to do, man. I can't be bothered with it all. Yeah, yeah.
I think it does come down. Here's my anti-corporate hat goes on again. Slides on very easy. It's just greed. They want more and more of the fucking pie, don't they?
Yeah.
So they don't want to pay 50% of their profits to someone just because they're using their app to play it. They want all of it.
Yeah. We're going to have a Netflix app, we're going to have a Disney app, we're going to have Amazon Prime, and it's just going to be carnage. It really is.
Do you ever see behind the scenes, and do you ever get like any sort of marketing back or any details back of people's ages from your app?
No, we don't.
Right, interesting. Yeah. I just wondered what the younger generation, the older generation, you know. I don't know, people in London read compared to people in Devon I'd be interested to see if there's that.
I might see if they can. I mean, we don't ask for ages and stuff like that when people sign up, so we may maybe something to look into because it'd be interesting to look at the stats on that and see if it all works out. But it's I mean, compared to Comixology, Comic House is a small pond, very small pond. I mean, so but I suppose it comes with benefits that you will be more featured on there.
Yeah.
As a result, and you're not going to get as lost amongst all the other titles as you would on comics.
And you get better money.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, we've done the picking out comic covers each week and stuff, and during a Comixology browse. So therefore, I scroll all the way to the end just in case I've missed a gem, of a cover. If I wasn't doing that, I probably would have missed out on a lot of titles that look quite interesting. You know, I've certainly bought indie books because of that browse that, you know, would have been lost it because they're third from the bottom of 120 titles that go live.
Which is where the digital have got to replicate the shelf in a shop for me. Because one of the beauties of like book shopping, record shopping, and especially comic shopping is I see everything on the shelves when I walk in.
Yeah.
And I think that's always the problem with like, it's always historically the problem for me for buying like books off Amazon and stuff. No matter how many books they recommend you, you'll never get that little sort of gem that you wouldn't have thought of.
Yeah.
You know, and I think you get that on the shelf and you've got to be able to replicate that on the front page of a, which Comic House does successfully. And I think Comixology does successfully as well. You've got to replicate that, haven't you?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because when you like searching, for instance, someone of like a superhero and there's like fucking 500,000 comics.
Yeah.
I'm just like, holy fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's something that came up this week. We were chatting about it earlier in the week, weren't we? Where I think it's the Comics Laureate. What's her name again? I've forgotten the lady's name.
Oh, God.
Anyway, she's been in to see, I think, Foils and discussed with Foils about putting comics on the shelf with books. And I've got to be honest with you, I don't want that.
To be fair, like I thought that was a good idea. And then when you mentioned it and I considered it for a moment, I was like, I can't see that working. I can't see that working.
Firstly, where do you file stuff? Do you know what's Wonder Woman? Is it a fantasy book? Is it a feminist book? Is it a superhero, you know, a crime book? And also I don't want to have to scan four floors of Foils to find just browsing for comics.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. It's a weird one, isn't it? The browse is really important. And for certainly, which is why we enjoy the Comic Mark guys and stuff like that, isn't it?
Yeah.
You have to replicate that online. Otherwise, it's, you know, you're not going to open your eyes to new stuff and develop new readers, I think.
Yeah, I can't see. There's not a big enough showing as well for the comic stuff to be in the different sections. You'd only take up, what, a fifth of a shelf or something. It's work. And like the manga stuff, you want to keep that all together. It's the idea of splitting up is just absolutely bonkers. I can understand the idea of trying to get it like.
If there was some bugs, I'd be open to it.
Yeah. Some of the no-brow stuff, you could quite easily, like, you'd have it in the graphic novel section and then have it maybe in a section like Kat's book, like in the travel section or travel blog
exactly.
or something. That might work.
I think if you did both, I'd love it, I think.
Yeah.
I don't want it to be diluted.
No. I think certainly if you're worried about getting lost in the crowd, which you can do quite easily week on week, another avenue that I see more and more, and it's something that I've certainly, you know, last week I talked about a title that does this, is Gumroad. I'm seeing a lot more people using Gumroad, which is...
Yeah, you're using it loads at the moment, I've noticed.
It's literally... And a lot of these titles are very much Gumroad is a pay what you think is fair. Here's the book.
Yeah.
You know, you can get it for free. I mean, most of the time you can get it free. Not all the time, you can. I think you can set stuff. But you could say, here's my book for free. Read it if you want. Or, you know, if you feel generous enough, throw me a couple of dollars or, you know, whatever.
I've always paid.
Because
I've made the effort to go to this place and do what you want, I always think
inclined. It just feels wrong.
Yeah, I know. Not for everyone, perhaps, but for us.
Yeah.
But this harks back to music. The first time I ever noticed this was that, you'll know this, Pete, was the Radiohead album.
Pay what you want, sort of, yeah.
That's the first time I noticed. It may have happened beforehand, I'm sure it will have done, but that's the first time I ever noticed.
I ended up buying the box set, so.
Right, okay. Yeah.
The other good thing about the Gumroad experience is, like, it's got the app. You put your PDF or whatever upload there, you pay it, and it automatically emails it straight away to the person who's bought it. You don't, like, with Big Cartel fan, we've had to action it when someone
from a Dropbox.
Like says, oh, well, I want this PDF, and then it seems a bit stupid that it can't just automate
that comic I bought last week, Angel. I was literally here's the money, bought it, here's your link, job done.
Yes, straight away. Although I do try and send them quite quickly from our account and from my new one, you know. But I have to say, mate, just as an aside, that fucking book rocked.
It's good, isn't it?
I haven't had a chance to read it yet.
Loved it, man.
Should get on that.
Beautiful story. Yeah, really touching.
Also, you can do what Robert Carey did, and he did Cruel Sunset, didn't he? Comic. He had the whole comic, and he's just pinned it on the top of his bio with a link to the comic. And what a great way of kind of using that as a calling card, because I think he was limited on what he could do with it. So having it free to read is just great.
No, yeah, I did it with that Silver Surfer comic that me and Dave Brown did.
Because
you can't sell it because it's a Silver Surfer comic. And we had a chuckle doing it. So I just send it out to people to see what they think.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, there's lots of avenues to get your work out there. I think you have to think about what your work actually is. For instance, like Jamie said, if it's essentially fan fiction of something, don't sell it. you'll get in trouble.
Like you guys, I'd still be fucking making comics, whatever.
Yeah, I would be.
I don't need to get the readership. Don't get me wrong, but
I don't care what people think about my comics, really. There's like four or five people whose opinion you guys present, and a couple of others whose opinion I respect. And beyond that, I don't. You know, I just do it for myself. I always have.
Yeah. So there's lots of options available to you. If you want to let us know of any others that we've missed out, you know, we'll put links on the show notes. So just email us when we do the contact links at the end of the show. But also. It has never been easier for any comic creator than it is right now to get your books in the hands of whether it be the general public or reviewers. Because we were talking about the PDF. Yes, everyone has a PDF. And everyone who's made a comic has probably had that email blast where they've sent out the PDF to lots and lots of different websites and reviews and stuff. I think at some point we will talk about the way you should do that, the way you should send stuff to, you know, we'll do another show about like reviews or journalism and stuff, and talk about the way you should present your work. But it is easy, you know, if you've got that PDF, if you've got that digital product, because it may be a labor of love. They're all labors of love. But at the end of the day, it is a product. It is a thing. Even if it's just a PDF, that is a product. That is something. You know, once you've got that, it's up to you how much you charge for it or you know. But you can send it anywhere. Do you know what I mean? You could just post it. If you've made a 50-page graphic novel and all of a sudden you want it to be online to read free, yeah, have at it. If you want to put it on Comixology and charge a ridiculous price that no one will ever pay for, you can do it. But
yeah, a lot of people do.
But with digital, it's never been easier to publish comics. Side note, it does mean, and you see an awful lot more dreck.
Yeah, we do.
We're all about the positive, and we're not just talking about anything particular here, but certainly because anyone can publish.
I think. It's very similar. I know I keep banging on about the music model, but it's very, very similar to the music model. Back in the 60s and 70s, if you wanted to make an album, you had to go to a recording studio, spend thousands of pounds, time, record label, all that sort of stuff.
And we still got quite a lot of shit. You know what I mean? But just times that by.
But now, I could create... I've got no musical talent whatsoever. I could create an album tonight and have it on iTunes tomorrow. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah.
I think it's a very similar thing where it is easier for everyone, but as a result...
It's two sides to the coin, isn't it? Because you have all those amazingly creative people who can now do, you know, fan art, or they can make comics, and you look at it and you think, my God, this person should be their job full time. And then you get the other people that...
I'm 100% positive. Like, I'm really, I know you are too, Vince, like into synthwave music. And we wouldn't be listening to half the stuff, even a third of the stuff. We're not for this kind of advent of technology able to put this music together and bang it out just like one person.
Yeah. It's just one person at home just putting their heart and soul into whatever they're doing.
But also, you've got that one person, but you've also got 100 people putting total crap bullshit.
It's
all a big, there's a lot of, but it makes it interesting trying to find the gems, I suppose.
Nuggets of things,
and you can tell quickly. I think, Pete, you can look at one or two images and you know, don't you? I think generally I can tell
from an album cover or a single cover whether the music's going to be any good, mostly. I mean, that's the first look, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know if you agree with this or not, but you can probably do the same with comic books. The cover is so important.
It's so important.
Sometimes you can get burned.
We've all been burned, haven't we? By
it's usually where there's a different artist on the cover. Yeah. In my experience, that's the
If it's a create your own title, good art does not mean a good writer, which I've been fucked over many times. So this fucking art is amazing. Then he got the comment through it, so I could barely get through half of it, and I thought, ah, I just ain't going to read this.
Yeah,
I did back one recently for two comics, and I thought, yeah, this would be good. And then I got a third through the first one. I was like, oh, I can't even bother to read the rest of it.
Yeah.
So, I'd love to have like a little mic in Dan's brain while he's reading a comic sometimes. I think that would
Things you'd hear. Jesus.
I wanted to do for one of the videos, like me reading a comic and then like cut to black and then fade back in and just toss it. He goes, well, that was a load of shit. It's a bit mean to whoever's comic it was.
We got a couple of questions when we put a shout out earlier this week about digital. We got a couple of people get in touch with us, so let's quickly run through them before we get on to the rest of the show later. Nick Bryan at Nick MB on Twitter.
Nick at Hackney.
Oh, Nick Bryan.
Yeah.
Nick at Hackney. Yeah.
Yeah. Great bloke. We're a big fan of his work. He said, we hear sometimes about digital comics having plateaued. Is that true for indies as much as the mainstream? And what do you think we'll get it over the plateau? Wider availability of cheap tablets?
So
you've got two questions in one there.
For a while now. There's been a couple of years of cheap Amazon tablets, haven't there?
The Fire, the Kindle Fire is like 20, 40 quid, something like that. It's not.
You kept getting a sale. You paid 20 or quid for it.
It's not much.
Yeah.
They want you to get in and start buying the books, which they do make the money on. That's a very difficult question, one that I'm not entirely qualified to answer.
Yeah. I hear that there's not been, for after an initial big bump in big company digital sales, I hear that it has slowed down. There's a gradual climb from what I saw on a report recently, but not that you'd know. It's not like 50% of people are reading them digitally by any stretch.
Yeah.
You know, it's more like 15 to 20, as I understand it at the moment. Yeah.
I saw someone read The Fucking Sun on the iPad. Oh God.
I think it's gonna keep increasing. I know I'm probably a bit
biased, it will.
But I just think as technology kind of outstrips itself and becomes more available, and you get more storage on smaller tablets. So I mean, saying smaller tablets, I've got a quite a big Kindle Fire, a 10-inch Kindle Fire. I'm not trying to brag or anything, but reading comic books on there, it just looks amazing. It really does.
I think we'll see the rise of VPNs and people reading it on American Comixology and stuff like that with the state, the sterling at the moment.
Yeah.
Mm. I can see people making, you know, the same way that people watch American Netflix or something on a VPN or whatever it is, you know, or Prime when they're in America.
We're kind of in that moment though of the crossover between digital and physical. And
Because I think the lifeblood of indie comics as it stands right now is still the printed book and the comic convention and all those soldiers out there going to every convention.
I think it always will be that. I do think the digital will increase, but it will end up complementing that. So
did we talk about this last week? I can't remember, because we've reached that tipping point, and we're in the early 80s, the most comics sold were in newsstands and you know, in drugstores, and then in the mid 80s more comics were sold in specialist comic shops, so you had the direct market. And as I understand it, I think I heard Jason Wood talking about this on 11 o'clock comics, we've hit the point now where more comics are sold in bookshops than they are in comic
that's
shops.
That's interesting.
It's an interesting tipping point.
It's very interesting times for the,
and a lot of bookshops are now behind digital. A lot of bookshops have had to invest in it,
Certainly. Yeah. I mean, I think one of the great things about digital now as an indie creator, wherever you are in the world, someone else on the other side of the world could read your comic.
Mm.
You know, we're very lucky to have, you know, gotten to know creators from America, Australia, wherever, and whether we've spoken to them on this show, whether that, you know, we've read their books, that never would have happened. You know, the availability of comics arguably has never been better.
It's something for everyone now, isn't there?
Yeah,
let's face it. Yeah,
you know,
and especially with all the shipping costs as well. I mean, the digital side of things is just, it makes total sense for a worldwide audience. It really does. It's things you can just, you could upload
look at the books
and as long as I'm awake, And I can approve it. It'll be on the app within an hour.
I mean, I
look at the comics we're seeing from that are not available physically, like the Europe comics that are coming out, stuff like that, you know.
We're mourning the fact that we can't get them physically yet. But eventually they're so good that someone like Dark Horse will pick them up and start publishing them. I think it's a great time for indie comics and in terms of digital, and no matter how much you love, you know, you could be the oldest school comic book reader or comic book creator in the world. The fact of the matter is, if you're not involved in digital or taking advantage of the fact of how available it is, or getting to know how to release your books digitally, you are shooting yourself, not in the foot, in the fucking head, if you ask me, because print only goes so far these days. I think you need to take advantage of
the options available to you. Oh, yeah, you do. Yeah, even me. Look at me. Yeah. I wouldn't even have thought of it five years ago.
Yeah, yeah. All of us on this show, we love printed books. We'd love to, you know, print all our books and, like, you know, just talk about that all the time. But also, you just got to be sensible. You know, if you can have a wider audience with digital, that's the be-all and end-all of it, you know.
Can I ask you a question, Pete, about the actual comics themselves for a second?
Yeah, of course.
We've talked a little bit in the past about the difference in reading experiences between a physical copy and a digital copy. And I really think that Guided View has changed the way we make comics. It's changed the page turn. The page turn isn't half as relevant for this for Guided View. And when you turn a page and you see, like, because you're only human, you do take in a whole page as you turn the page, you know. Mm-hmm. But with Guided View, you only take in the next panel. Is it something that you're aware of? Do you think that comics are changing because of that, do you think?
I don't know. It's a really good question. I hope they're not, to be honest with you, because I think it'd be a real shame, because for me, getting to that full page spread and turning the page to that full page spread, do you know what I mean? It's just something that's so special about that. And you do take in the whole page and you do have to... I find myself stopping myself going to the last... panel, do you know what I mean?
I know what you mean. The best example, I put a thing up on the blog which is quite popular last year about, I read an issue of Master of Kung Fu, and in it Midnight hangs himself, and if as you turn the page you see him falling, and then oh my god, what's happening?
Somebody's falling.
Sort of falling, and then the last panel, in a sort of Gwen Stacy kind of way, the rope tightens and he hangs himself, you know.
Yeah.
Which, when you turn the page in, you know, the Master Kung Fu comic, you see the whole thing. You see him hang himself, and it's a shock at that point. But when you're swiping through the Guided View, you go, fall, oh, he's died there. You know, it's a whole different experience. It really is. Yeah. You know?
I'm really hoping people aren't creating their comic books to go along with the Guided View thing. Don't get me wrong, Guided View thing's great. It's not something that we use on Comic House
But you do have to scroll through the page depending on the size of your tablet, don't you? I find I have to scroll through the page, you know, if that makes
sense.
Depending
on the size of the tablet. And we have got a landscape mode, which basically you can split the page into two halves and kind of scroll up and down it, which is quite a nice idea. But for me, just to see a splash page in all its entirety and to see that last panel on the same page is quite important for me.
Interesting.
I've never been. I'm not dissing the Guided View. I just prefer to
keep it. The page layout is something. You know, it's an important element of comics, is the page layout. We talk about it all the time on here, don't we?
Also, as well as a Guided View, web comics have changed quite a bit in terms of the way things are paced. Someone like Dan, who's creating Vanguard, and he's treating it in the issues type format, so he's got those, you've got the page turns in mind, haven't you, and you've got the you know, the old school stuff, but some people are just doing an ongoing sequential story, and you know, what is a page turn when it comes to those things, when it comes to a web comic?
Some pages are a start and a finish to a story for each one, because one might come out only once a week or once a month or something, you know, you kind of got to work that out, you know.
It's evolving all the time, isn't it? It really is. But I can't see Comic House going to the Guided View thing anytime soon, because
I like
to be able to turn the page and see the whole page.
Fair enough. It's a lot of work to add that Guided View thing as well, I would imagine.
I think that's probably why Comixology takes so long to submit to be honest with you, because obviously there's a lot of technical aspects in all that, whereas Comic House, as I said, you can submit it to me, and the guys just get it up within kind of an hour on the site, because it's just a straight transfer. We transfer the PDF, break it down into JPEGs because it's a bit easier to manage, and then you can just get it right up on the app right away, which I think people just want it right away. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They just want
that's nice to see.
One quick point about the Comixology guided view is it's slightly odd in the fact that someone starts making creative decisions about your comic and how it's going to be read, because if you had been on a full page splash and it zooms in on a couple of boxes of text and then zooms out to reveal, it's like, say I didn't want that, but you've done that. It's kind of you're getting involved in the creative process,
and you can't go back to the story. You can't go backwards and forwards with them about it. It's just the way it is.
It's the way it is, and that's it.
Okay.
It's an odd one.
I know they've reduced their staff quite significantly at Comixology, haven't they, recently? There was a news item about it. Yeah, and I presume some of that is down to automation. I don't know.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
The robots have taken over.
I'm not sure. It's probably quite a costly experience to kind of integrate that into the Comic House app as well. And even if I was against it, I don't think I'd want to do it. Do you know what I mean? The funding we get through the subscriptions and the ad revenue, we split with the creators and stuff. And I wouldn't really want to I just want to use the money that Comic House gets for the server costs and for upgrades and all that sort of stuff. So I wouldn't want to take a risk and do the guide review, because I'm not sure everyone would want it. As Dan said, I don't want to start A&R in a project. Do you know what I mean? And deciding which panels should be seen more significantly than others, and which zooms in where, and all that sort of thing. I just want to present the PDF as the creator intended it to be. So
some projects do not suit a guided view. It's just as simple as that. The Batwoman book is the one that is much quoted, isn't it, from a few years ago, 10, 12 years ago. And the layouts in that were like, it's like the arms, you know, the arms sweeping around a clock, or, you know, look like a stained glass window. How do you replicate that in a guided view? It's a difficult thing, you know.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, a book like 32 Kills, which I think you guys are all aware of. The way that's laid out in book form and PDF form is just, it's the crux of the whole story. Do you know what I mean? The panels, the 16 panels are just so important. I think just to have one panel swiping through all the time would just change the whole experience of reading that book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Plus, you'd be swiping an awful lot. There's tons of panels in that book.
Yeah.
We've got another.
Which has been a criticism of Mr. Miracle, actually, man. I know we're big fans of the Mr. Miracle book, but I've heard that's a big criticism of it, because it's that, like, there's a lot of panels and there's.
It worked better for, it worked better for me digitally than it did in print.
Really? On a guided view?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. I'd heard the opposite from someone just the other day. But
I just thought there was some of the spreads where. It's very much the same figure, like not really moving. It could just be a facial expression over like 9 panels or 18 panels or whatever. When you have the guided view, there's that. It's almost the dramatic pacing of it that works quite nicely. But seeing it on the page did nothing. It just flattened it. But that's me personally.
So. Yeah. There's almost an animation quality to that. Do you think?
Yeah.
In a certain.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. We've got another question from @ Noob Comic Guy. Thank you for listening. And I think it's the first time we've had a question from him. Okay. There's a couple of questions, but I think this is we've covered some of them. But is it easier to get published digitally rather than print?
Well, yeah, I think so, don't you?
There's no cost barrier. Yeah. First off, if you've got your comic. But you have to pay to get it printed.
But
I think we're going to reach the point where a lot of people will put your book out. Even the big companies will put your book out digitally. And I know Marvel and DC have these almost only digital books that then hit trades, don't they?
Yeah.
But
I think what he's aiming for here is, you know, people have their book and they submit to publishers with the hopes of getting their book in print, you know, like Image and etc.
Right. Yeah.
But what if you only wanted to do it digitally? You know, how would you then go to what publisher could you go to about it?
No, I have to say I hear different things from different editors. Mm. I hear from certain editors that I work with who would much rather have a digital file. And I've heard from someone else that I've worked with that they would rather have a physical file because they can read it on the bus on the way to work.
It's tricky. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it really depends on the personality of who you're speaking to. Yeah.
And another sort of side question to that, it was actually before the question I just asked, but I thought it was quite interesting. Does being published digitally hold the same weight with the big companies portfolio wise?
No, I don't think so. I really don't think so. If someone came to us and they said they had a webcomic, we'd go, right, well, that's nice and cool. But if they came to us and said they've been published by Avery Hill or they've been published by Good Comics or anyone like that, then we would, I personally, I can't speak for everyone, but I personally would take them more seriously.
Yeah, because literally anyone could fucking make a webcomic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if you do get it printed yourself, I think if you've actually got a physical product that you can say, you know, I self-published this, you know, if someone was going to Tony and, you know, all those guys, sort of say, I self-published this, here's what lots of people said about it, and it got a bit of a buzz. Do you know what I mean? That sort of thing could be more appealing to someone.
I think so, and even that, I think even just a self-published physical copy is more... more impressive to a publisher than just a webcomic.
Yeah.
I'm not saying just a webcomic. That's the wrong thing to say because webcomics can be their own entity. Yeah. But I think rather than a webcomic and let's face it, a lot of people, especially in the big companies, they like to pretend they're hip and trendy and they read webcomics, but they do like the physical product as well, I think, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's a weight to a physical product. I mean, we've seen it with the comic me and Vince had this week. There's a definite impact of holding it and looking at it that you don't quite feel, you know.
Sorry.
On the flip side to that, though, would it be more impressive to go to a publisher with a web something you've released digitally yourself that has had an incredible reaction, really good reviews, and a great uptake in readership? That would be.
I think it's definitely horses for courses.
I think following goes a long way, doesn't it? Yeah. Because the publisher will then go, if that person's got a massive following just on their own like that, we might be able to take advantage of that when it comes to the printed.
I think that does happen, and I think it really does happen. And we have heard people, we've heard from like probably some of the best writers in the industry who we've spoken to have been passed over because someone else who's not as quite a good writer but has a much bigger social media presence has been taken on. I think
there's a situation going on with that I find deeply frustrating.
Me too, and wrong, to be fair.
I want people to be there on a meritocracy. Just how good they are at what they do.
Ding, ding,
that's
ding.
Anything that counts.
Dan Butcher's big word of the week. That has to be a thing. That has to be a soundbite we're putting in it every week. I love it. Anyway, so and then we could talk about this for weeks on end. And I think it's the thing about digital, it's an ongoing discussion that will never end.
Ask one more question, man? Because I think it's important for people who are producing webcomics is the cover image. And I know it's something we've talked about before. If you're producing a book for Comic House or Comixology, I would say the cover image needs to be of a certain iconic, distinctive feel. I think the size of a comic on a shelf in a comic shop, you're a lot closer to it and you can see the detail. But if you're scrolling through something that it might be, an inch or two high and wide?
It needs to be fucking killer. Like,
Very,
very, in my opinion, very contrasty, hard-hitting. Basically, you're looking at almost like a postage stamp.
Yeah.
And if you've got a hyper-detailed battle scene on the postage stamp, you can't really, your eyes are glazed over it. But if it's kind of very well-defined, easy to spot and very eye-catching, that's what you want to go for.
Yeah. And you see movie posters going for this on sites as well, where the image, you can only look at something like the It poster is very distinctive and stuff like that, you know, Hereditary or something like that. You know, even no matter if you're looking at it as an inch square on a screen, you know what it is. It immediately is striking and you will remember it. I think people got to be careful with what they're putting on their covers these days.
I would even suggest that perhaps look at, I know it's an extra cost, but doing a variant cover for the digital, maybe.
I agree. Right.
Strip back the cover you've got and just kind of make potentially, do you know what I mean? Just to make it stand out a bit more. So,
I've done it. I mean, I think it's really worth, you've seen on like the streaming services, they change their covers to their films and TV series often, maybe like once a month, like, because they know that people get used to seeing the same thumbnail. Oh, I don't want to watch that. So you change it and then you think, it's that. And you reconsider it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen that, but never sort of noticed it, if you see what I mean. Never taken it in.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah.
I don't think is that something we consider?
Is that something we consider for comics then? Is it? Do we think if we put a series on Comic House or Comixology or whatever, we think about refreshing the image, the icon, you know,
potentially.
I think it's worth, especially to get fresh eyes on it, I guess.
You
know, yeah, I had a brainwave earlier, but since we're coming to the end of the discussion, if you paid a higher amount for a PDF for a Kickstarter under the proviso that you could use that money off of the physical book, say I had a £10 book and I've like, it's a £4 PDF, but if you buy the full version, I'll give you that £4 back.
Okay.
So you get it for £6.
Right.
I'm not sure that would be a good sales tool or not.
I don't know how you'd work out the mechanics of that. What do you mean after the Kickstarter's finished?
I get a nosebleed just thinking about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, after the Kickstarter's finished, so if you said, right, Joe Bloggs, you backed this, and they get in touch, said, I want such a great comic, I want the physical copy. And it's like, right, because you did the Kickstarter, like, we'll knock off the £4, whatever it is, shipping or whatever it is, that you can upgrade your purchase, as it were.
So the digital copy is a leader to buy the
exactly
physical. Yeah, okay, it's possible. And look at it, this Marvel in, I'm not sure if they do it all the time, but Marvel give away the digital code for their physical, in their physical copies, don't they? Yeah. To get people onto their app, and it's kind of the same but reversed, isn't it? Yeah. You know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Let's finish
first. Take a crack.
This is a topic that could go on for ages, but yeah. But we've got to talk about some great comics to recommend in a second. So let's finish with a comment from Paul Moore, brilliant artist, at pmoore121. He just made a statement about price, which I think is quite good. Paper comics are no longer cheap enough to attract casual buyers. My theory is to make it cheap as possible and so easy to click and read. It's not worth the hassle of looking for pirated versions, and it's available everywhere, so it can attract and grow a casual readership, which may become loyal. Which is something I think we kind of touched on.
Yeah, we did, I think, a little bit there, didn't we? Yeah.
But yeah, I think if... is it easier to get a following digitally? Who knows? I mean, we're trying day on day to get a following every bloody week. When it comes to this bloody,
there's
show.
A lot of people out there doing the same, isn't there?
Yeah.
This is for someone. Maybe we'll do one on marketing one day. We'll get somebody in from a company who deals purely. I mean, we've got two people, well, three if you include me, who deal with marketing at No Brow, and Zoe, who's kind of my boss, and she's great. She's got a spot on. She knows exactly what suits people, what they want, where to do it, that sort of thing. You know, it's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there you go, folks. Obviously, there's lots more to talk about, as there has been with all of the shows in this particular series. I can't believe we've got a series within a series. It's crazy, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you very much for tuning in over the past 6 weeks for these shows. They've been fun to do, been real good laugh, and we've learned something, and hopefully...
Yeah, we have. Good feedback as well. Yeah.
But like everything,
as a listener as well, I've learned stuff. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, thanks, man.
I think everyone, no matter how long they've been in this industry, it's just been really interesting to listen to this whole series.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
nice. Thank you, mate.
Cheers, Pete.
Thank you, Pete.
Yeah.
As we say every week, we are not the experts. We are the people trying to make our own comics and our own work better. So this series was as much for us as anyone else. So because we're inherently selfish.
I've been up in every show.
Yeah. Thank you very much for checking out. Well, I mean, these shows as well have given us lots of things to think about for upcoming shows. So there's going to be plenty more in the future. I mean, as Tony said there, marketing is something that we've talked about having a show about that in the future. So that is a topic of conversation that is going to happen.
Yeah.
We're going to dust ourselves off, right? We've had 6 weeks of being semi-serious, certainly when it gets to the topic. When it comes to the topics, hopefully they've been serious. And if that was all you wanted, then you could listen to that, and you don't have to listen to the carry-on podcasting that happens before and after. But next week we're just gonna blow the cobwebs off and have a do something. We've got some ideas of what we're gonna talk about next week. So but thank you very much for joining us on this past 6 weeks. It's been great fun. We'll probably touch on a lot of these subjects again. Thank you to all our guests who have come on, including you, Pete. Thank you to everyone that joined us this week to talk about the different stages of the process because it's been hugely enjoyable.
But go now, make comics now. You've got everything you need to know. Just yes. go make a comic. Brilliant.
Yeah. Hopefully, if you are on the cusp of releasing your comic, you've got some knowledge that will help you going forward. So go forth. Oh, and by the way, we want to read that comic, so get in touch with us. Now, anyway, have we got any shout outs this week, gents?
I've got a couple. Yes. You want to go, Dan?
I do. Self-serving one, first off. Vanguard's coming back.
Yeah.
Wednesday, the 25th of September. Issue 17, covered by Damian Edmondson, whose work on his new comic, Pre-Mortis, comes out any day now.
He's got the proof through, hasn't he? We follow each other. Yeah, that's good stuff. Him and his good lady wife, I think, are working on it.
They've both done it. I've only seen little bits and bobs, so I'm not quite sure the content, but it looks kind of very much horror. I think a horror vein kind of comic.
Looking forward to seeing that.
And we've got the Leamington Spa Comic Con just around the corner, Saturday the 5th of October. So Tony will be a stateside when we're at that one. Me and Vince will be flying the flag.
It's so, turning into a busy few months now, isn't it?
It ramps up a bit at the end of the year.
That'd
be great. There's so many creators there. You've got the Edmontons, Wagner. Yeah, loads. So come along.
Yeah, we're going to be there. Yeah, please come along to the event. It's a great day anyway for all the family. But plus, you know, come and buy some comics from us. Come have a chat about comic books because we'll be there all day. We may be sketching on the day. We'll see how it is.
I like it when you two sit there sketching. I like that.
Yeah. So we're gonna have all four print issues of awesome comics there as well.
Yes.
Which you can buy if you haven't got it yet. That you can buy the complete set for a song. So there you go. We're not gonna sing for you.
We may do.
Issue 4 just popped up on Comic House. See what we think.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Go and check it out.
And then buy a hard copy if you like it. There you go.
Yes. Tony, you said you had some shout-outs as well.
I've got a couple, yeah. So The Spark, which I'm editing for Little Heroes. We're currently sitting at 82%, so come on, folks. We've only got, I think, 30 more days left. We could really do with getting over the line on this one. And it's for a great kids charity for Little Heroes. Me and Vincenzo are in it on the back page, not on page 3 as normal. we got Monster Spotters Club. Now, if we get over the line and we hit the next stretch goal, you will be getting... Monster Spotters Club badges, so like ones that you can sew on your jacket. I think that's going to be brilliant, like a Cub Scout.
That's great.
Yeah, so that's really nice. So yeah, back that one. Convention wise, I'm at New York. Come and see me at the No Brow stand at New York. We got a little surprise which I'm not allowed to talk about, which is going to be there. And don't forget also to get your tickets for Nottingham, which is the 19th of October at the usual place in Nottingham. You can buy tickets either online by visiting their website, or you can buy them at the Forbidden Planet in Nottingham, as well, as I understand it. I'm really looking forward to that. Me and Mr. Prolix have just finished our... I like to do a strip every year. Not an actual strip, but a comic strip every year for Nottingham, and me and Mr. Prolix have done one. The gang's got back together for this year's comic, so please go and buy tickets. It'll be a blast. Are you coming, D? I'm not sure. I can't remember what you said now.
For which one? The
Nottingham.
Well, it depends. It's a bit of a boot for me, to be honest.
Right, isn't it? You've got to get around all the way around, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it'll be me and Vince, if not, be me, Vince and Dan, so pop along. It's going to be good. It's always good at Nottingham. We always have a blast there.
Yeah. It's great fun.
They're my ones, guys.
Oh, lovely.
Nice one. So there you go. I give a shout out to one more Kickstarter?
Yeah, go for it.
Mondo Comics presents Wings of Terror by Andrew Richmond, covered by Grant Richards. Absolutely fantastic cover on this, and the link isn't working, so we'll put that in the show notes and you can check it out yourself.
Indeed. Looks right, great.
I mention the Kickstarter that's coming from the aforementioned John Wagner, which is Rock of the Gods, the next Rock of the Reds?
Mate, it looks so good.
Which does look really good. Him and Dan have done an amazing
Dan
job.
Dan Cornwall, love Dan's work. Yeah.
So that looks very exciting coming up soon.
When I was at a certain comic convention, we can't mention. Recently, Dan showed me some of the work from on his phone from that, and it looks fucking ace. But I tell you,
it looks really good. Really excited about that. So I'm looking forward to that Kickstarter launching.
Cool. That's any day now, isn't it? As I understand.
Yeah, it's pretty soon. I haven't got the exact date with me, but they've been teasing it for a while. So pretty soon.
Nice one. Cool.
Amazing. Right, now it's time of that time of the week where we're going to recommend some comics. for people. So who wants to go first this week?
Guess first. Go on. Oh, go on, mate. Yeah. Go on. Yeah, guess first. Go on.
Yeah.
What would you like to recommend, Pete?
Well, I'm a bit biased because I just want to recommend the stuff that Comic House is doing, to be honest with you.
It's all right. It's all right. There's plenty on there, man.
The Awesome Comics got issue 4. I don't know if you're aware of this or not.
Oh, I've heard of
tell
it.
Us more.
Well, yeah. Worth checking that out on the comic. It's just now, and I've missed that really. But we're going to be at Thought Bubble, me and Steve Horry.
Oh, nice. Oh, cool.
Desert Men, City of Lost Souls, Catalyst, 32 Kills Close. And we've got issue 12 of Comic House launching as well, which is very exciting.
Oh, awesome.
So,
oh,
nice. But I'd just like everyone to check out Lizard Men on the Comic House website and the Comic House app, because it's a beautiful series. I've really enjoyed being involved with all that. So
good stuff, man.
That's my recommends, but it's very very biased, I'm afraid. I do apologize.
That book, Steve, that Lizard Men, it reminds me of like Golden Age Vertigo. It's that sort of quality to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, really good
story.
It's that he'll be really pleased to hear that, because the team that's worked on that has just been fabulous. They're a dream to work with, and they've produced a really beautiful story. So that's my recommends, and I just feel really embarrassed about recommending some of my own ones, but hey, whatever.
No, nice one.
No. Yeah, people need to check these comics out.
Yeah.
Who wants to go next?
Well, okay, sorry.
You can go.
Thank you. Yeah. The Road of Bones I read this week. I read the first issue, written by Rich Dueck, who you might have seen. He's done some Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle stuff over at IDW. Yeah. Art and a cover by Alex Cormack.
This is a cover that I think I saw once. The cover's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, now Alex, you probably know him from, he did Sync with John Leese.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Letters by Justin Birch, edited by Bobby Corral from IDW. The story is, it's 1953. We're in a Siberian gulag in a place called Kolma. And it's just like icy, just hell. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can imagine the worst Russian prison. Do you know what I mean? And this is like outside, and they're digging in the sort of the frozen ground, and they're starving. And unsurprisingly, a couple of the prisoners grasp the opportunity to escape. But one of the prisoners is called Roman. And this is where, I picked this up because of Sarah from TKO. Because it's, I don't know, just something about the sort of the side of the sort of Russian history that I'm interested in at the moment, you know. And you don't see enough of it, really. You know, you can read War and Peace, but it's quite boring. So I decided to read a comic instead.
Yeah.
And this is just a 4-issue miniseries, so I thought I'll pick this up and have a look at it. And I love Sarah so much. This book is just absolutely fucking brutal. Men on a chain gang, they're digging in the hard earth, and they're just like, one of them is just indiscriminately killed by one of the guards, and is just life is cheap kind of stuff. But there's a little twist in it. There's a character called Roman who has, part of his job is working in the kitchen, and you catch him handing over a little bit of bread underneath a fence. He's caught by one of the guards and really badly beaten. And he's sent out, you know, and you at the time you think, is it a female prisoner? Is it an animal? Is it, you know, and you don't really find out what it is until a little bit later. It's just full of sort of, the art's gorgeous, but it's just history and mood and hardship. And then you get introduced to Russian folklore. So you realize he's actually feeding a sort of this sort of spiritual creature that lives beyond the fence. And he remembers from his dreams and stuff like that. And you get a real, it really changes the way you look at it. You know, you find out that he's actually been, he's got 25 years because he's made a joke about Stalin. So he's been sent to prison for 25 years. And you find out that the creature he is feeding is a Dmorvik, which is a fairy creature who in Russian folklore guards over you when you're in danger, sort of thing. It's not, and you find that out towards the end of the book. You find out what the truth of this sort of, if it is a creature and what kind of creature it is. But there's a moment. So the majority of the first issue, the first 2/3, are in this sort of very dark and grubby and muddy and dirty prison camp, a bit like in The Great Escape, where they live in the huts, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And there's a sort of fiery kitchen, and it's just it's a mixture of dirt and blood, basically. So the grubbiness and just the blood splashed everywhere when people are being beaten up and killed. It's a little bit like the 30 Days a Night feeling to it, to a certain extent. It just sort of feels a bit like that sort of darkness. And then the second third, the last third of it is no spoilers because it's 4 issues in this series. It's the only first issue, but they escape, and they're sort of trekking across. They open up the page, so you get the whole top of a page is just this beautiful view of snow in the mountains, and they're trekking through the deep snow, and it just becomes really beautiful, really really impressive. And genuinely, just I thought, oh, I'm in for one here. This is going to be like a prison drama, and suddenly you're just out in the middle of this sort of incredibly dangerous nature, and it is like incredibly beautiful as well. Really, really, really good stuff. I'm going to probably read the next three tomorrow. I suggest only read. I stopped off at the services on the way back from working today and read this issue, and was so taken by it. I don't know what you guys like, but occasionally we read stuff and think, I'll review that this week, and I put it aside. And then when I get to it, I think, nah, I can't really talk about that one. It's not very good.
Yeah.
And I was sort of desperately looking through Comixology and Comic House trying to find something that really sort of, you know, caught my eye. And I came across this. I think Paul Dunn in Orbital mentioned it to me the other day, mentioned The Artist as being a pal of his. And it suddenly occurred to me that not only is it about Russian history, which I'm quite interested in, but it's got this sort of art style that's incredibly, there's a Sean Phillips edge to it, but much more of a sort of raw, instinctual kind of side to it, where it's less coherent in a good way, if you know what I mean. It's rougher edged, and no lines are closed, and you know, it's that sort of thing going on. And I just the color is they use a couple of pages. There's a reveal right at the end, which has got, unsurprisingly, I won't spoil it, but it's unsurprisingly, it's got like a red wash to it, which works so well. So I mean, everyone knows IDW. IDW. publishing.com, or just find them on Comixology. There is a trade coming. I don't think the trade's out quite yet, but it's really worth looking at. Have a look for it. So it's called Road of Bones. There you go.
Nice.
My one.
Dan, cool. Do you want to go next?
Yeah, my one's, well, you guys know what I'm going to talk about. It's the Hall Chronicles.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, thank you, mate.
Tony sent me a copy during the week. Yeah. It's tired of the old cliches of glamorous working girls. This is a comic that tells the stories in their own words. Written by Tony Esmond, by Vince Hunt, Rachel Ball, Sarah Harris, Tom Curry, Rick Jackson, Charles Raymond, and Stuart Mulrain. Warning, very strong content. It's a fantastic read. Do you want to tell us a bit about it, Tony? Is that the best way?
Yeah, if you want. So the history of it is our friend Sarah, a bell rings every time we mention Sarah's name on this show. She was like, Sarah's a huge comics fan, isn't she? You know, and one of our favorite people. And she said, do you want to sort of fancy collaborating on something, write me something? She's always done art. She's more of a sort of prone to sort of multimedia, perhaps a sort of graffiti kind of side of things. She said, do you fancy writing me something? And I wrote her something, and we played about with it. Actually, we extended it by a page, which is completely down to Sarah. And we wrote this story about one of the back characters in Cockney Kung Fu, who's a prostitute called Peggy, who has a couple of lines in the first issue of Awesome Comics Anthology. And I decided to elaborate on her life somewhat. It's just interesting. You know, the back characters in these stories, they never get it. But we decided to sort of elaborate on quite a few of them. And she was one of them. There's another character who appears in it, who's a guy called Sidney Small, who also appears in the first issue in one of the prose stories in this. And so I wrote that for her, and it was so utterly gorgeous. And what she did with it was, and I'm loving the fact that people are really digging. Well, they're digging all of it. Do you know what I mean? But they're really digging Sarah. I mean, it opens with Peggy in bed, and Sarah's used material as the bed cover and stuff like that. And it's outstanding, mind-blowingly good, and much better than even, you know, you imagine stuff when you write it in your brain.
Yeah.
And this is really good. She sent it through to me, and as she was creating it, I thought, what am I going to do with this? How am I going to get this out? Because it's only a 5-pager. How do I get this out to people? You know, I didn't want to just put it on my blog or anything. You know, I wanted it to be a coherent volume of stories. So I'd written a couple of text pieces for the mailer, the Cockney Kung Fu mailer, which I rewrote one of them, and I used two of them in the book. And I've come across these girls, allow me just to say, through a working experience, or, you know, not in any other way, but and I just got tired of the cliche of the working girl in movies and TV and even in comics, and they're described as either super glamorous sort of strippers, you know, or just like heroin addled, you know, just decrepit, you know, looking 20 years older than they are. And there's space for that. That does happen, but there's the gambit between them of everyone, and you know, and I wanted to write some stuff that had a real reality to it. And it struck me that the only way you get these people to tell their stories is by getting them to tell their stories. So I'd actually written a couple of them as scripts. So a couple of the stories that we did it as a way that someone talks to a film crew. And I'd written a couple of them as actual sequential stories, right? But I thought, no, I want them to tell their story, so I'm going to have them tell their story rather than, you know. So they just sit there and they tell their story to an unseen film crew who you see in one of the last pinups, which is drawn by Stuart. And I think that really, really works, that little reveal, which we put at the back, didn't we, V? So we go. I approached some creators who I thought would suit the work. Rachel Ball, love Rachel, always loved Rachel's work, and I'm hoping we're going to do something more. Sarah did a story. Charles H. Raymond did a story. Rick Jackson and Tom Curry. We've got a pin-up by Stuart Moraine, a pin-up by Vince, who even just outdid himself with the disgustingness.
It's absolutely haunting. It's really haunting. I mean, like, tonally the book shifts so much through the comic, like from one moment it's comic, next minute it's kind of tragic, and then the short stories, and then that one, like the end bit, we get to reveal the crew, and then on to that Vince run. It's like a punch in the face. It's really good.
It's almost like that's when the crew have left, that's one of them, you know. That's the, and we called it, I think me and Vince talked about it, and we called it Reality Sucks, which still makes me chuckle. That's what we called it. But they're outstanding. And I think you said you put the red wash over it, didn't you?
Yeah.
Is that the idea?
Yeah.
The other thing is the cover. Vince's idea completely to have the videotape, which just works so well. And like we were talking about earlier about distinctive, you know, iconic covers, and I love that one. Yeah, so it came to the point where everything was done. I thought, well, let's put this out. So we sort of did it on matte finished paper, and stuck it out on digital, and then it came through physically from Mixum. Funny enough, last week's guest, 2 days later. So
it's my first ever editing credit as well. I've never been called an editor before.
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It's kind of a very, very like a refreshing read. It's very different, and very well done to everyone involved, and yourself, very much yourself, Tony.
Thank you. I just wanted some reality. I mean, it is gross. You're right. There are some really gross moments.
I can speak to everyone else that was involved in it, saying we're very proud to be part of this.
Yeah, comment. And we've got a little DM group, haven't we? And it's like everyone's like Steel Chang on it now. Yeah. You know, it's really nice to be involved in. You know, everyone's like been really positive about it. So,
Where's that going to be available, Tony? That's available.
NeverOnAnything.bigcartel.com. Look at that. Oh. In fact, I impressed you both because I sent it off to print and I created a Big Cartel store in one morning. And even Vince went, "Fucking hell, how'd you manage that?"
He became legit in a couple of hours.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Easy as that.
I don't know about that. But yeah, thanks, Dan. I appreciate you, man. And I purposely haven't sent it. There's a famous quote. I can't remember the name of the philosopher, but it was the worst thing in the world is watching stupid people enjoy themselves. And so I've only sent it to people who I think have actually got a valuable comment to make on comics. You know what I mean? Yeah, there's a few sites out there. Let's not mention them, shall we? Let's not sing their praises or sing in any way. But I haven't sent them out to them. So, the people who have understood it, I appreciate it, and I'm really pleased that people have understood what we did. And if you go to Beyond the Streets, which is a charity, you'll find them online. And if you want to drop some money off with them, and they look after girls who've been smuggled or they've been mistreated as working as a prostitute, and it's a great little charity. So go to that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very important.
Yeah.
So, my recommendation this week is going to be short and sharp, especially after that. I mean, how can you follow that up? You can't follow that up, really. Although you should buy it, everyone, because a printed copy looks bloody lovely as well.
Yeah, I'm well pleased with
that. Yeah, it's come out really, really well.
Down to your design, babes. That's what it's all about.
Well, no. Look, I only did a little. I didn't do much. It's everyone else that's made it amazing. You know, So there you go. Yeah, so this week I was having to move around in the house, and so I had to empty some bookshelves. I'm going to go back to the well of the bookshelf this week to do a quick recommendation. For an indie book that I think was completely overlooked at the time, it's completely forgotten now, so much so that I can't find it on Comixology, and I can't find it on Amazon or something like that. But I remember picking it up, I think it was early 2000s or something like that. It's a book by Brian J.L. Glass, who went on to do Mice Templar, Michael Avon Oeming, who everyone will know from Powers. And this
he's doing some great Dick Tracy at the moment.
He's an amazing artist, yeah. And this was a book called Ship of Fools. Did you ever hear about this one?
Maybe.
It was put out by Caliber back in the day. 96 actually was when it first came out, actually. And I came across this. I remember I found a trade paperback of it at, I think it was at Nottingham Comic Con or something, you know, through one of those graphic novel bin dives, and I found it and just thought, God, I really enjoyed that series. I only had like one or two issues of it, because as we all know, getting indies back in the day was, especially American indies, was quite hard to do. I think I ordered it through Previews at the time. That was the only reason I managed to get hold of it. I think it had a Dave Johnson cover, one of the issues. So I read a couple of issues, and it's crazy. It's basically about a bunch of sort of notorious galactic criminals, who sort of, they're all insane though. They're all a bit mad, and it's I can't really describe to you the story. It doesn't finish because they only managed to do, I think you said 10 issues over the run, because it went from Caliber, and then Image picked it up. And this was Image back in like the 2000s, so not the Image we know now, say. So they were shouting into the void of independent comics when not so many people were hearing anyway. So unfortunately, this series didn't get the love it deserved at the time. But I have a real fondness of it, and I just found it on the shelf. I thought, you know, when you forget you have a book, and then you open up a couple of pages, and then you're reinvigorated. Just thought, oh God, this was so good. It's worth it alone for Oeming's artwork, which I think I preferred his artwork. You can see where the journey he's going to, where he's going to be like when he does Powers, etc. But he had a bit more detail at this point. There's a bit more going on. And I prefer the stuff in Ship of Fools. That's me personally. But then again, I haven't followed his career too much afterwards. It's a black and white book. And I think for all of those people that love 2008, this is the sort of story that would have been tailor-made for 2008.
Okay.
You've got insane characters. One of the characters in it is Jim Morrison, who faked his death, and he's living in the future now. And there's an alien planet where lots of people look like Elvis and Hendrix and things like that. It's trippy. I think you'll enjoy it, Tony, because it's mental. There's a small group called, one of them, the figurehead is called Marla. She's like a gun-toting psychopath. There's Darius, who's people believe that he's a cannibal who ate his own family. So there was lots of mysteries played out. But in this, I've got this volume 1, Death and Taxes. I can't remember where I got it from now. This was published by Slave Labor back in the day. And at the back, which I didn't notice at the time, there's a big letter from Brian Glass just sort of saying, you know, it's sort of lamenting the fact that this book didn't go on to, you know, it was sort of lost, and they had so much more to tell. But thank you very much for picking up this book. Because I think when a story like this, and you put so much into it, and you've planned a 50-issue arc, and then it dies, you naturally just going to feel, doesn't anyone care? You know what I mean? It's sort of like, you know.
Yeah.
So that in itself, the letter at the back was quite interesting to read. So if you see Ship of Fools, Michael Avon Oeming, Brian J.L. Glass, if you see it at any conventions, then please check it out. The book I've got has got a David Mack cover, which I think does nothing for the book itself.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Because it's so startlingly different, you mean?
Yeah, it's so completely different. It's all very much watercolour. But this is, I loved it. I'm gonna, I'm going to reread it properly again, but I remember reading it before and just thinking, bloody hell, this is an LSD trip with guns.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So, yeah, cool. So keep an eye out for that one.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. So there you go, folks. Another one in the bag.
Nice.
Hopefully stuff has been learned. And, yeah, you go forth and check out loads more comics this week. I think we've done all right past couple of weeks, haven't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, I reckon so. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, if there's anything that we mentioned in the show, my cat's wandering around in the background and he just distracted me.
I did hear
me
the meow.
Yeah, did you hear the meow? Could you hear
yeah,
the meow?
Loud.
Bobby.
That was Joe.
You were actually on the show, Bobby. Bless him. That's the first time my cat's ever been on this show, so he'll probably ask for a return guest spot at some point in the future.
Yeah.
But anyway,
our most popular guest, probably.
Yeah, if you want to get in touch with us and let us know that you'd actually prefer to have a cat on this show rather than us, then there's several different ways you can get in touch with us.
I thought you were going to say Tony there. I thought you were going with Tony.
No, I'd never replace you. I'd never replace you.
Don't break my heart. Don't break my heart. Okay, thank you.
You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. To get in touch. Like I say, we'll be announcing what we're going to talk about in the next couple of shows in several different ways. We'll announce it on the Twitter @AwesomePod. Go there and follow us. Well, we'll be spouting nonsense, retweeting great Kickstarters you should check out, and more. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/AwesomeComicsPodcast. And if you like getting involved in talking about comics without any hard sell, without anything, and just loving the medium, then join the group Awesome Comics Talk on their Facebook groups, which there's always great chat going on there. I forgot to post the episode this week, didn't I, Dan?
Oh, I saw that. I only remembered that you hadn't when you did it.
I thought I had. So
yeah, yeah. Someone, Kieran, got in touch and said, you haven't posted the episode. And I was like, oh, okay. And I was like, oh, shit, yeah, we haven't.
Bloody hell.
but people were sharing it anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay, cool.
Yeah. So we'll post the episode on thread. So if there's anything from this episode that you want to talk more about, there'll be a thread on the Facebook pages to go and follow that more. So
we had Rob from the last episode, like when I talked about his comic, he got involved.
Yes.
Yeah, it was good. Sensible conversation. Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
Fantastic stuff. That's what we're all about here. So, a sensible conversation with creators and publishers and stuff. We're just.
Not between each other.
No.
That'd be ridiculous.
No. And thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. I still can't believe my cat distracted me. I'm never normally distracted.
Yeah, you went a bit weird there. I thought, I know what's happened.
Yeah, I was. Normally, I have to worry about you distracting me, Tony. And now I've been sabotaged.
Rename your cat Tony, and then you can shout, Tony, no, get your head out the toilet.
That'd just be confusing. Well, I say
Tony,
that to you anyway.
Stop licking your nuts.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I say that to him anyway.
Yeah.
If you listen to us on iTunes, please like, subscribe, leave a review. Have we had one recently?
No, not for a few.
No.
Yeah, go on, give us a review. Go on.
Yeah.
Dan, well, what will you do for people if they leave a nice review, Dan?
Once you do your dance, I'll do mine.
So there you go. There's something you'll never get. So.
But, I'm literally going to go on Twitter and go, Stacey Vince owes you a dance, owes you a dance, owes you.
Shut up. me and Dan might dance together at Leamington. There's a reason to go.
Oh, no, don't say that.
If there's something like that happens, someone will video it. You know our luck.
Yeah.
But if you listen to us on any of the networks, such as Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, what are the networks we on, Tony?
We're also on Pod Digby, the world's biggest dog.
Hey. Nice. Never actually watched that.
No,
I wouldn't.
Me neither.
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, you know it's bad if Tony Esmond's saying, don't watch it.
Don't watch it.
Yes. And, where can people find us online, etc.? Tony?
Neverhideanything.bigcartel.com. Big business. That's me all over. Or S-O-S, E-Z-O-H-Y-Z on Twitter.
Brilliant. Dan?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Nice.
Issue 17 starts.
You're going to have to pick up the pace, Dan, because you're getting back on the Vanguard train. So come on, boy, come on.
Yeah. I've got a fucking a buffer, which is so rare for me.
Oh, Tony, do I need to ask you what that is?
Needs good buffing.
Oh, my word. Check out his Instagram for that. as for Instagram and Twitter, you can find me on there @JesterDiablo, and you can find out more about my comic at theredmouseFromMars.com. Pete, thank you once again for joining us, for being a return guest.
Pete, it's good. Always a pleasure, man.
Thanks for having me on, lads. It's been great to talk to you again.
Yes. Where can people find you and your lovely service? Pardon? You know what I mean.
Comichouse.com or comichouse.com struck app is where we're at.
Nice. So, there's a reason we talk about it every week, folks, because we do actually believe in it.
Yeah, we really do. Yeah, there's some great stuff on there. Yeah.
We'll talk about it.
Just want to create a beautiful archive of indie comics, and the more the merrier. So come and have a look if you're interested.
Yes.
Nice one.
There you go.
Get your comic on there.
Get it on there. And go forth and enjoy your week, folks. I'm going to go off and give all my pets a big cuddle now. Because I'm a big softie.
I'm going to go and give myself a good buffing.
Yeah. Well, Dan's got a buffer, so perhaps Dan can buff you.
Yeah, drop your buffer off.
Not that type of buffer.
Oh. Oh, my word. To be continued.
Did you just become Kenneth Williams then?
Oh. I was going to try and do the laugh, but I'm not. No.
What should I do, Vince?
If what?
What? Why is it quiet? What happened? I thought my internet had gone down.
It's gone off the rails, so it's time to say to everyone, have a brilliant week, read loads of comics, and don't worry, we'll actually know what we're doing next week. No, we won't. But until then, have a brilliant week, and from everyone on the show, what do they do, Dan?
He's done it on purpose.
He has done it on purpose. And this is what he gets for it. So have a brilliant week. And what do they do, Tony?
Stay awesome.
I thought you were going to let me down then. If that was the case, then no one gets to say it. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.